you, Frank. We are called to healing and remembrance by the words of Philip Hewitt, Minister Emeritus of the Unitarian Church of Vancouver. From the fragmented world of our everyday lives, we gather together in search of wholeness. By many cares and preoccupations, by diverse and selfish aims, are we separated from one another and divided within ourselves. Yet we know that no branch is utterly severed from the tree of life that sustains us all. We cherish our oneness with those around us and the countless generations that have gone before us. We would hold fast to all of good we inherit, even as we would leave behind us the outworn and the false. We would escape from bondage to the ideas of our own day and from the delusions of our fancy. Let us labor in hope for the dawning of a new day without hatred, violence, and injustice. Let us nurture the growth in our own lives of the love that has shone in the lives of the greatest of men and women, the rays of whose lamps still illumine our way. In this spirit we gather, in this spirit we pray. Now it's time to light our chalice. The words are printed in your order of service. In our time of grief,
light a flame of healing and remembrance, the flame of continuing life. In this hour, we seek understanding, serenity, and the capacity for forgiveness. We light this sign of our quest for truth and meaning in honor of those who go before us. We compel this sign together by lighting this symbol of the peace, love, and justice.
And now Jackie Cartwright will lead us in the responsive reading, number 720, We Remember Them.
In the rising of the sun and in its going down, we remember them.
In the blowing of the wind and in the chill of winter, we remember them.
In the opening of buds and in the rebirth of spring, we remember them.
In the blueness of the sky and in the warmth of summer, we remember them.
In the rustling of leaves and in the beauty of autumn, we remember them.
In the beginning of the year and when it ends, we remember them.
When we are weary and in need of strength, we remember them.
When we are lost and sick of heart, we remember them.
When we have joys we yearn to share, we remember them.
So long as we live, they too shall live, for they are now a part of us as we remember them.
At this time, Helen Bennett will come forward and read her poem, The Hills of Tennessee.
There's nothing quite as beautiful as the hills of Tennessee, where the UU churches nestle in the valley of the free, where the summer sun is shining to allay our deepest fears, and children's hearts are happy till insanity appears. The doors are always open, no matter what the cost. We are here to help the helpless. We're a haven for the lost. The homeless and the rebel, the godless and the gays, are our brothers and our sisters. We're the same in many ways. But the dream one day is shattered by a madman's fantasy, and our congregants are martyred in the hills of Tennessee.
At this time, we'll be singing hymn number 123, Spirit of Life.
Mm-hmm.
this time, the Reverend Jack Higgins will come forward. He speaks to us from the UU Friendship Fellowship at Pineda.
Good afternoon. Over the past 5 or 6 days, I have been receiving some of the email that has gone on among the members of the congregation and their good wishers. It's an amazing thing that the congregation in Tennessee is not showing anger and acting vindictive. And I have a prepared manuscript that was being sent to a local newspaper written by one of the communicants in that congregation. And I'd like to read that to you because of the 235 pages I've read of these communications, I think this is among the best. The news slammed into us on a Sunday morning that someone had opened fire at Tennessee Valley Unitarian Unit Church. Immediate expressions were disbelief, sorrow, anger, horror, and shock. Then the questions began with concerns about our friends who were there, who was hurt and who was okay, what can we do to help? And then naturally, as the whole thing washed over us, questions about what had actually happened. It's only natural to understand why this happened, why these people, why on this day? Trying to make sense of it is how the media put it, concluding that we will likely never know all of the answers. Well, yes and no. We'll never know the answer to the mystery of the randomness of suffering because there isn't one. Why this person? Because he was closest to the door doesn't seem enough of an answer. Other questions we're finding out some answers to ask because the shooter wrote a note. Why this congregation? There was a link, at least, in the shooter's mind to the things that troubled him so deeply. Why this day? It may have been just the time he settled on anger and despair, congealed in his mind, driving him to pack his shotgun in a guitar case. Senseless is the word that most of us describe it at all. I would gently beg to differ. As the terrible shock begins to wear off and the roller coaster of recovery that accompanies every trauma takes over, each of us who is touched by this tragedy should realize that we are not helpless to understand at least some of the factors that created this moment of evil. Making sense of it starts here. We live in a culture of violence. We see violence every day among us. We see it in the world. We see it in daily lives. It is violence we must conquer, and that is our job.
And now we have Sam Williamson, president of the UU Congregation of Cocoa.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for everybody showing up today. Our Cocoa Church, a small group of people, we probably have about 13 to 15 active members at this time. We were not aware that this event happened on Sunday morning service. It was after the service that we learned of this. This tragedy holds a special place in my heart because I am from Tennessee. I am from Maryville, Tennessee, which is just south of Knoxville. And it was just a horrible feeling that something like this would happen. It does brighten me that the folks from this church have not chose to be angry at the person that did this. Not too many people know that I am a Republican, which is a hard thing for some people to understand, and being a Unitarian. And I have read some of the literature this gentleman had also read. But I'm a UU member, and I come to this church to learn the values that this church upholds. It wasn't something that that I take lightly. And our congregation has spoke up. We've asked the church for anything that we could do for them, and they've passed on to us that they would just like donations sent to, what was it, Paul?
Well, when I talked to the lady on Monday,
yes,
they didn't have any idea what they were doing. They're talking that their pews had been damaged by the fire. So.
Yes, they were asking for donations for to repair the pews. But we at COCO, we stand with you, with Panita, all the UU churches here in this area, and all of the churches around the country, and especially with the UU church in Knoxville. Right. Thank you.
And now Reverend Wilson from UUCB will speak.
United in the spirit of our community, characterized by the values articulated in our principles, we are joined into one community. Miles may separate us, but by spirit we are not separated. Today our brothers and sisters are in pain and grieving, as we are, for when one suffers, we all suffer. We live in a world that isolates us. We live in a world in which we numb out our spirits in order to live and to survive. We live in a world that's hard. We live in a world that sacrifices its children to its economic systems. We live in a world where people die prematurely because they don't have health care and we don't change. We live in a world where it is necessary to numb our psyches to survive. And yet today, I'm asking you to soften up your psyches, to move past that numbness as we sit here, as we stop, and as we attempt to remember what was lost. We gather to support a church that is miles away, but yet it is not. We gather here to support people who are miles away, but yet they are not. When you go to the web page of the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church, these are some of the first words you'll find. Love is the spirit in this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant. To dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. And as you read the rest of their webpage, you can see the actions they have taken to bring that statement to truth. They use the podcast, they use YouTube, they use performing arts, they use literature, they use everything they have talents and gifts for to follow the law of service. This is who they are. Their vision statement, the religious education of all ages, ministers to diverse groups, to promote cooperation and understanding, has significant impact on social action, tried to have a ministry effectively to high school and college youth, to the wider community, facilitate Unitarian and Universalism, an awareness to the larger community. Does it sound familiar? It's us. It's who we are. Their beliefs. We believe in freedom and religious expression to all individuals to be encouraged to develop their own personal theologies, We believe in the tolerance and the ideas and religious ideas. We believe in authority of reason and consciousness. They are us. What is it that we have lost? What is it that we stop to remember? What is it that we grieve? I've taken what I could gather from the lives of Linda Krager and Greg McKendry, and I thought I would share a bit about their lives so that we could become more familiar with what was lost. Linda Krager. At first, her niece, Debbie Campbell, was speaking about her, and the first thing she says that she will remember is her beautiful smile. She was a very giving person, a loving person. She had just recently retired from being a college professor and had moved to Tennessee with another couple, their friends, and they were raising granddaughters together. Linda Krager, she did not have children, and her husband, Duane, they did not have children. And you can imagine what that must have been like for this couple that they've known for 20 years to move from Texas, to move to Tennessee. And part of their primary agenda in life was to raise these two little girls up and to be their grandparents. That was what she had in mind for her life, and that indeed is what she was doing, even at the church, at the play, because the oldest granddaughter was a participant in that church. She was particularly close to her granddaughter, to the granddaughter Chloe, and with her grandniece's daughter, who was two, Olive, periodically, the three of them would travel and they would go swimming, and that was in the course of their day. And I've got to thinking about this woman who was a professor of literature having responsibility and playtime with two little girls who would soon become young women. And I can imagine her, when they're 12 and 13 years old, saying, "Have you read Margaret Fuller yet? Have you read Katie Stanton yet? Do you know about the suffrage movement?" So as these young girls, coming young women, would integrate the literature of what it means to be a woman in this culture, I can imagine she would do that. As well as take them swimming. And her niece remembers being a little girl and being with Linda and laughing with her and playing with her and then being disconnected from her. And then reconnecting with her and saying what a great thing it was to reconnect with her, because we would talk about what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a mom, what it means to be a person. And you can already tell the influence, because the niece said, "I'm going back to college and get my master's degree, and any college professor that I know will influence you to continue your education." And so we see the fruit of that. So we grieve that loss. And the last thing in that article that her niece said in reference to Linda being with her daughter was she had that maternal thing with Chloe. She was close to her. So we grieve the loss of Linda Krager, her death, with Debbie Campbell, her niece, with Duane, her husband, with Joe and Mary Bernhardt, those that she was sharing grandparenting responsibilities with. We grieve with Chloe, the 6-year-old, and Olive, the 2-year-old. We grieve for what will not be because of her death. We grieve for the absence of what will not occur because of their death. We grieve with all those who lost this woman. We stop. We break through our numbness. And we grieve. Greg McKendry. Tomorrow's sermon has been changed to a response to hate. And that is for tomorrow. His response for however we want to think about it and however we want to understand it, his response to aggression was he stood in its path so that others would not have to feel the hate and the aggression. That was his initial response. That gives us a window into who he was. As this article goes, we learn something about Greg McKendry, and we learn it from his new son, a 16-year-old foster son. Now, if many of you know the foster care system, and many of you know about adoption, and that 16-year-olds often don't find places in families. That's difficult to do, but Barbara and Greg McKendry decided to take this 16-year-old in. Not only decided to take this 16-year-old in, the play Annie that was going on, they had been practicing for months, and they had had this child for 3 months, so they were integrating this child into the Unitarian Universalist community. That's what they were doing before this event. The 16-year-old comes running out and he says, "You make sure," to the reporter, "you make sure people hear Greg McKendry is a hero. You make sure that my foster daddy gets known for who he was," is what this young man was saying, that he was a hero. His description is, he had a large heart he would give. It's not surprising he did what he did. But here are the daily things that Greg McKendry did. His friend said his daughter was going to college. The next day he shows up with boxes to help pack her things to go to college. Not only did that, he found out and called the post office. He found out what would be the cheapest rate. That's who he was. Now we know Greg McKendry. He's the guy that puts up light fixtures. He's the guy that changes the light bulbs in the church. He's the guy that does things without asking because they need to be done. He's in all our churches. He was also a generous man. When they needed a refrigerator, he got them a new refrigerator. When they needed a hot water heater, he got them the new hot water heater. When President Bush said we were going to get $600, he said, "Hey, for those of us who don't need it, let's use that as a fundraiser." And this was a church man, active in the church community. The court-appointed person, Jacqueline Cantrell, said, "It's hard to find 16, who was the foster parent's legal representative, it's hard to find people to take a 16-year-old in. And for what I've known of Greg and Barbara, they are saints. They are saints. That's who he was. We grieve the loss that others share because of Greg McKendry. We grieve with Taylor Bessett, his foster son. We grieve with his wife, Barbara, the friends at the church, Brian and his daughter, Miriam, who at the time of the article still had the boxes in his car. He was active in a social action committee. We grieve with that committee. We grieve with the legal representative of the foster child. We grieve with their church. And again, we grieve that which will not be. We grieve that which will not come about because of their absence. We know Linda Krager and Greg McKendry. They're sitting next to us. We know them. They're in our churches.
At this quiet time, and in this place of worship, we would seek to know more deeply what it means to love one another. We know so well our own needs. We know that we ourselves need understanding, affection, and recognition. Why is it then that so often we hesitate to extend these precious gifts to others? The cost of a kind word is small. The moment that it takes to listen could hardly be better used. A gesture of forgiveness can mark a new beginning. An embrace or a note of appreciation can convey crucial encouragement and comfort. And yet so often we fail, even within our own families, to live by the sacred command that we should love one another. O Spirit of life and love, strengthen our faith. Increase our resolve to give more generously of ourselves. We pray for the courage to take the risks of love. We pray for the insight to see ourselves and others in perspective. We pray for humility and understanding, that we may always stand ready to forgive and begin anew. And now I invite everyone to take a few moments of silent reflection. We will now sing hymn number 100, Peace Like a River. I invite you to stand as you are willing and able. Distinguish the chalice with the words printed in your order of service. We extinguish this chalice, not the flames in our hearts that inspire us to live lives full of goodness and love. We keep that internal flame lit as we remember the words sung by the children at Tennessee Valley UU, "The sun will come out tomorrow." Hope, faith, and love provide the warmth in our hearts as we strive to make all of our tomorrows shine brightly on everything we do and everyone we touch. Leaves should not fall in early summer. Winter should not follow on the heels of spring. Yet when they do, we can and must speak for life, for there is no answer to death but to live vigorously and beautifully. We give respect and dignity to the ones we mourn only when we respect and dignify life and move towards its richest fulfillment. Let us honor the lives of Linda Krager and Greg McKendry and the work of their congregation by living ourselves more nobly and lovingly in the days ahead. As you return to the routines of your lives, go in service to love and justice, and may peace abide within you. Following our postlude this afternoon, those of you who wish to remain for further reflection and an opportunity to engage in dialogue are welcome to stay. Reverend Wilson will lead the discussion as we share and explore our thoughts and feelings about the tragedy. Our service has ended. Go in love and peace.